eCatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eCatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. You know that word populism? It feels like it's everywhere these days, right?
Absolutely. It's slapped onto leaders from, well, all over the map, Europe, the U.S., Latin America, and honestly, it's starting to lose its meaning a bit.
Yeah, it gets used almost like an insult half the time.
Yeah.
So that's exactly why today we're diving into what's really considered the definitive work on this, Cosmides' framework for understanding populism.
We really want to cut through all that noise, you know, the media hype, the political spin. Mudd gives us an analytical lens, a way to see what populism actually is.
Right. What are its core ideas? And I guess the big question, what does it really mean for democracy? We need a clearer picture.
Mm-hmm. It's about moving past just reacting or panicking even and getting towards a more informed understanding. Mudd helps us tell the difference between, say, a genuine challenge to how things are done and something that might actually threaten democratic institutions themselves.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself, Cass Meadow. Why is his take considered like the gold standard here?
Well, he's basically one of the world's top experts. Simple as that. Populism, extremism, European politics, that's his wheelhouse. He's a professor at the University of Georgia, also linked with the CREX Center in Oslo. Serious academic chops.
Impressive credentials. Mm-hmm. He's written key books like The Far Right Today, I know that one. But what makes his angle on populism so distinct?
I think it's the depth, really. He didn't just jump on the bandwagon when populism became, you know, a big story in the U.S. He'd been studying these movements across Europe for decades.
Ah, so lots of groundwork.
Exactly. Fieldwork, deep analysis. And that led him to develop this ideational approach, which is now pretty much the standard way political scientists think about it.
And I really value that his approach feels, well, nonpartisan and not alarmist either. He isn't shouting about whether it's good or evil.
No, he's analytical, calm, rigorous. He just wants to define what it is, which is so helpful when the topic itself is so heated.
Yeah, you get the sense he uses the same tools, whether he's looking at France or the U.S. or anywhere else. You see that broader perspective.
Definitely. It's crucial for understanding it as a global thing.
Okay, let's get into the meat of it then. What's the absolute core idea in Mudd's work? What makes populism different from just, you know, being unhappy with the government?
Right. The central argument is that populism isn't just a style or like a way politicians talk. He calls it a thin-centered ideology.
Thin-centered. Okay, what does thin mean here?
It means it's, well, it's simple. It's a core set of ideas, but it doesn't have a grand vision for everything like how to run the economy or foreign policy details. It's skeletal, almost.
So if it's thin, it needs more substance. It has to latch on to something else.
Precisely. Think of it like a parasite needing a host ideology. So on the right, the host might be nationalism, maybe nativism. On the left, perhaps it's socialism or anti-imperialism.
Ah, okay. So the populism part is the engine, but the host ideology tells it where to go.
You got it. The host shapes the specific policies and goals, but the engine, the thing that defines all populism, is this fundamental moral split.
Split?
Yeah. Populism always divides society into two groups, and they're seen as completely separate and fundamentally opposed. You have the pure people on one side.
Versus the corrupt elite on the other. That classic setup.
Exactly. And it's a moral division. One side is virtuous, authentic, good. The other is irredeemably corrupt, self-serving, bad. You need that black and white worldview.
Okay, but hold on. Mudd says populism is radically pro-democracy.
Right. Yeah.
Because it champions the will of the people, the volonté générale. But then he also says it's fundamentally anti-liberal. That sounds like a contradiction. How can it be both?
Ah, that's the absolute key tension in his work. And it's super important to get this distinction. Populists aren't against democracy in the sense of rule by the people. They love that idea.
Okay.
But they are against liberal democracy. Liberalism introduces constraints on pure majority rule. Things like protecting minority rights, separation of powers, having an independent judiciary, a free press, checks and balances.
Right. Because if a leader truly believes they alone represent the pure people and their general will, then any institution that gets in their way, a court ruling against them, a critical news report, opposition politicians, must be illegitimate because it's thwarting the real people's will.
Exactly. Those liberal constraints aren't seen as safeguards for everyone. They're seen as tools the corrupt elite uses to block the pure people. It's an obstacle to be removed.
Wow. Okay. That clarifies a lot. So let's nail down that core DNA, the thin ideology. You said there are three key elements that have to be there for something to be genuinely populist.
Yep. Three core concepts. First is the pure people. And this isn't just like the majority in a polling sense. It's a moral category. They're the good guys, hardworking, authentic, the heartland, the real citizens, defined mostly by not being the elite.
Okay. And number two, the corrupt elite.
Mm-hmm.
We know that means politicians, but Mudd says it's bigger than just Washington or Brussels.
Oh, much broader. It's anyone perceived as blocking the people's will. So yes, politicians, but also often economic elites, think global financiers or Wall Street, cultural elites too, academics, out of touch artists, sometimes Hollywood.
And the media is always in there somewhere.
Almost always, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The fake news media or the mainstream media, they're seen as part of the establishment, manufacturing consent, not speaking truth to power for the real people.
Got it. And the third piece, tying it together.
That's the general will. This is the belief that politics should just be a straightforward, unmediated expression of what the people collectively want. No complex compromises, no delays, just do what the people demand.
So it's not enough just to be angry at the government. You need that specific moral framing. Pure us versus corrupt them, and the idea that our will should rule directly.
Precisely. That's the populist formula.
Okay, so that's the what. Now, the why. Populism doesn't just spring out of nowhere. Mudd talks about demand and supply, right? Voters wanting it and politicians offering it.
Exactly. Both sides of the equation have to be there for it to really take off.
Let's start with the demand side. Why do voters find this appealing? It's not just one thing, like people losing jobs, is it?
No, it's usually a potent mix. There's definitely economic insecurity, real feelings of being left behind by globalization, my industry's closing down, by policies that seem to benefit others. That's real.
But there's more.
Oh, yeah. There's often a strong element of cultural backlash, a feeling of alienation from rapid social changes, maybe related to immigration or shifting values, a sense that the country is changing in ways people didn't agree to.
Right. And then the third element.
Deep political disenchantment. Just a profound sense that the whole system is rigged, that politicians are corrupt or just don't care, that institutions aren't listening anymore. This creates an opening, a real hunger for something radically different.
So people are feeling left behind economically, maybe uncomfortable culturally, and deeply cynical about politics. That's the demand.
That's the fertile ground, yes. But demand isn't enough. You need the supply side, too. You need political actors to step into that space.
And that's not just about having a charismatic leader, although that helps.
Charisma is part of it, sure. Leaders who can convincingly claim to embody the pure people. But Mudd puts huge emphasis on the failures of mainstream parties. That's critical.
Failures? How so? What do mainstream parties do wrong?
Well, he argues they often start acting like a kind of cartel. They all converge towards the center, especially on big economic questions. They end up offering very similar sort of technocratic solutions. The real passionate debates about inequality or national identity, they disappear.
So they become bland,
mm-hmm.
indistinguishable, offering variations of the same thing.
Kind of, yeah. They might offer competent management, but they stop representing distinct visions or addressing those deeper anxieties we talked about, the economic pain, the cultural shifts.
And that creates a vacuum. If the mainstream isn't talking about what people are worried about, then the populist leader steps right in and says, they don't care about you. They don't even see you. I do. I speak for you, the real people. The failure of the mainstream creates the opportunity.
And because that populist ideology is thing, it can attach itself to different hosts, explaining why we see it pop up looking quite different around the world.
Exactly. Look at the left-wing examples. You had Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. His populism used a socialist, anti-imperialist host. The elite were the economic oligarchs and U.S. influence. The promise was redistribution.
For Podemos in Spain.
Right. After the financial crisis and austerity, they targeted the financial and political elites who imposed those measures. Still, people versus elite, but with a left-wing host.
And then contrast that with the right-wing examples, like Marine Le Pen in France. Her populism attaches to a nativist, often anti-immigration host. The pure people are defined more ethnically or culturally. The corrupt elite includes the EU establishment in Brussels.
And someone like Donald Trump in the US?
A clear attachment to nationalism and nativism. The elite becomes the swamp in DC, the establishment politicians, and, very explicitly, the fake news media. Same engine, pure people versus corrupt elite, but different targets and different host ideas.
And Mudd warns that when these movements get into power, the focus quickly shifts to dismantling those liberal checks. He uses Viktor Orban in Hungary as a key example.
Yes, Orban is almost the textbook case. He took over a more mainstream party and then systematically went about weakening or capturing independent institutions, the courts, the media, universities, NGOs.
All while still holding and winning elections.
That's the crucial part, maintaining that democratic legitimacy through elections while hollowing out the liberal components of the democracy from within. It's what's often called illiberal democracy.
Okay, let's pull back a bit and look at the big themes here.
Hmm.
If you had to boil down Mudd's core messages, what's the first one?
I think the most important starting point is populism is a symptom, not the disease itself.
A symptom of what?
A symptom of a crisis of representation. Its success signals that something is wrong with how our democracies are functioning. It shows that established systems, mainstream parties, are failing to adequately represent or respond to significant parts of the population. It's like a fever telling you there's an infection.
That's a powerful way to put it. Okay, theme number two.
It comes back to that paradox we discussed. Populism is both a potential democratic corrective and a serious threat.
How is it a corrective?
Well, sometimes it forces important but neglected issues onto the agenda. Maybe it's rising inequality that mainstream parties were ignoring, or maybe it's anxieties about national identity. It can shake things up.
But the threat part
is that its methods, its core ideology, directly attack the institutions needed for democracy to function long term. The free press, independent courts, respect for minority rights, the very idea of legitimate opposition.
So it can highlight problems, but its solution damages the system.
Pretty much, yes. And the third key theme is how populism changes the nature of politics. It fundamentally moralizes politics.
Everything becomes good versus evil.
Exactly. Every disagreement isn't just a policy debate. It's a battle between the pure and the corrupt. And if you see your opponents as fundamentally immoral and illegitimate, well, compromise becomes impossible. Pluralism, the idea that different groups and views can coexist, breaks down.
Because you don't compromise with evil, you try to defeat it.
Right. That moral certainty is great for mobilizing supporters, but it makes the actual day-to-day work of governing in a diverse society incredibly difficult, if not impossible.
Mudd's writing is quite direct. Let's touch on a few key phrases or quotes that really capture his thinking. They're like anchors for understanding this.
Definitely. The absolute bedrock is his definition. Populism is an ideology that considers society to be ultimately separated into two homogeneous and antagonistic groups, the pure people versus the corrupt elite. That clarity is essential. No wiggle room there.
Yeah, it sets the terms clearly. And then the one that really reframes the whole debate for me, populism is not anti-democratic, it is anti-liberal democracy.
That distinction is crucial. It tells you where the threat lies, not necessarily in elections themselves, but in the attack on the constraints, the liberal institutions.
And finally, the quote that points towards how to respond.
This one really gets to the heart of it. The main problem is not populism itself, but the underlying pathology that populism is a response to, namely, the crisis of representation in contemporary democracies.
So fix the underlying problems in democracy itself. Don't just fight the symptom.
Exactly. It's a call for self-reflection from mainstream politics.
Okay, let's make this practical. For someone listening, just trying to make sense of the news, how can they use Mudd's ideas?
I think the most direct application is for critical media consumption. Really listening carefully to political language.
How so?
When you hear a politician attacking institutions, maybe the courts, the Electoral Commission, the press, civil servants, ask yourself, using Mudd's framework, is this a specific criticism about a specific policy or decision? Or is it framed as that institution being part of the corrupt elite, deliberately blocking the will of the people?
Ah, so are they just disagreeing or are they trying to delegitimize the referee?
Precisely. That distinction helps you gauge whether you're hearing legitimate political dissent or rhetoric aimed at undermining the liberal democratic framework itself. It's a useful filter.
And what about for people actually in politics?
Mm-hmm.
Policymakers, party strategists, what's the takeaway for them?
Well, the big warning from Mudd is about simply trying to ignore or condemn populist voters.
Mm.
Calling them names, dismissing their concerns as illegitimate, it just doesn't work.
It probably just confirms the populist narrative that the elite are out of touch and look down on them.
Exactly. Mudd's analysis suggests the only viable long-term strategy is for mainstream parties to get serious about developing substantive, inclusive policies. Policies that actually address the root causes, the economic anxieties, the sense of political alienation, maybe even finding ways to navigate the cultural tensions respectfully.
So less about building walls against populism and more about fixing the foundations of your own house.
That's a great way to put it. It's about democratic renewal and reform, not just defense.
Okay, as we wrap up this deep dive, what was the one thing from Mudd's work that really maybe surprised you or stuck with you the most?
For me, I think it was the stark emphasis on the failure of the mainstream. We tend to focus so much on the charismatic populist figures themselves, but Mudd really forces you to see how the inaction or convergence of established parties created the opening, the political cartel idea that really resonated. It suggests the problem started long before the populist leader arrived.
Yeah, that's powerful. For me, it was crystallizing that distinction between being anti-democratic and anti-liberal democracy. Mm. It explains so much about why these movements can be popular, win elections, yet still feel threatening to the system as a whole. It's not about stopping votes. It's about protecting the rules of the game.
And realizing that this isn't just a passing phase. Populism, in Mudd's view, is kind of a permanent feature or at least a recurring challenge for democracies.
Which brings us back to your point about renewal. The most valuable lesson might be that challenge Mudd poses to liberal democracy. Mm. Populism isn't just an enemy at the gates.
Right. It's also a mirror reflecting back democracy's own shortcomings. It signals where our institutions need to adapt, become more responsive, more representative. The ongoing task isn't just to fight populism, but to strengthen democracy itself.
A really essential framework for understanding our times. Clear definitions, sharp analysis, invaluable stuff.
Couldn't agree more.
See you next time. With another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.